time to ride some sandworms. Today I'm talking about Dune Part 2. This is Scott's Self-Indulgent Movie Podcast. Hello, movie friends. Welcome to Scott's Self-Indulgent Movie Podcast. I am Scott, and today I am talking about Dune Part 2, the follow-up to 2021's Dune. And this is, I think if you're somebody who's a fan of the novels, this is the completion of the first book. And hopefully, Villeneuve said he was interested in making a Part 3, specifically about the sequel. So hopefully he gets to do that. I think that, considering the box office and kind of cultural impact of this movie, good chance, but here's hoping, fingers crossed. I had the pleasure of seeing this in a big old theater with a bunch of excited people, with my friends Jamario and Maria, and had a blast, and for reasons I'll get into right now. So without further ado, let's get started. Dune 2 was the most excited I'd been about a blockbuster movie in a long time. Not to say that Hollywood, big-time Hollywood movies have all been duds. Hell, Oppenheimer just won Best Picture and was a massive box office hit. But most of the big projects coming down the pipeline have been either franchise movies, where I basically knew what to expect, projects that were hard to get excited for because I've been burned before by hype, or train wrecks that might not have even been interesting enough to dissect for fun. But Denis Villeneuve and company coming back guns blazing for the finale of the first Dune story, yep, I'm all in. And rightly so, because Dune 2 is one of the most entertaining and unsubtle pieces of blockbuster entertainment in recent memory. Picking right up where the last movie left off, the film follows Paul and his mother, Lady Jessica, as they ingratiate themselves with the Fremen while fending off attacks from Harkonnen troops. But while Paul says he wants to live his own life and reject his prophesized ascent, his mother, the fundamentalist Fremen, and the cruelty of the Harkonnen's rule may push Paul to embrace a destiny he never wanted. So I loved this movie. There's a lot of reasons which I'll get into, but I do want to note a handful of dings or differences folks have noticed between the movie and the source material. The main ding I have is that despite the movie's substantial runtime, Paul's eventual transition in the final act looks and feels sudden, so it's really hard to track his inner monologue and motivations. I also think the final act beats could be a lot longer or bigger, and there's some fun stuff from the books that's not here. For instance, the fate of Paul's unborn sister, that the film skips or doesn't dive into as deeply as the book or even the 1984 adaptation does. So, that all said, why did I love this movie? Well, got a couple of big reasons. First, we have a great approach to action. One of my favorite things about Denis Villeneuve's approach to action in this movie is that he does a very good job of giving the audience just enough information to get excited or tense before letting things explode on screen. I'll use Paul trying to ride a sandworm as an example, since most of y'all know that's coming, and it's not a giant spoiler. It's in trailers and stuff. The baseline for the scene is set up pretty simply. This is a rite of passage for the Fremen warriors, and if Paul wants to be one of them, he needs to summon and ride a giant sandworm, without being killed, of course. So we know what his ultimate goal is from the jump. We also know how he'll attract one of the thumpers, as they've been dubbed, and that someone he's got to get on top of one and stay there. Everything else is left for the audience to figure out through context clues. For instance, how does he plan on positioning himself to hop on? And it's conveyed through visuals, as Paul runs in a certain direction and we see the path the worm is taking. Shot selection is really important here because the camera operates as both the onlooker's and Paul's eyes depending on the moment. Another reason this is so effective is that each action beat has a narrative purpose, such as demonstrating a villain's demeanor and fighting ability, or Paul proving himself to Chani. We also have fantastic production design, visual flair, and character through costumes. But halfway through both this movie and the previous Dune film, I wondered out loud, why the hell don't most movies look this good? Essentially, not every movie puts as much care into every aspect of the production like these movies do. There's more on-site shooting, physical sets, and time put into the costumes in these movies than the lion's share of Hollywood blockbusters nowadays. For instance, the hidden Fremen settlements blend physical sets and CGI pretty seamlessly and ensure that if anyone is going to interact with something like water, you can see characters touch it. This always looks and ages better. It also reinforces the franchise's old but futuristic vibe, since these cities are clearly invoking ancient Arabic cities, clothes, and customs. It's also not afraid to get weird with it when they drift into the glaring white of planet Harkonnen, or deliberately invoking Joan of Arc for Florence Pugh's costuming. And finally, we have the main theme of the movie, which is faith as a weapon and means of control. Another reason I love this movie is that it is sledgehammer subtle about what it's about. This is about why blind faith in singular messiahs is dangerous and how it can be weaponized, with people who believe in it being used as pawns. Paul, at first glance, is a lot like other reluctant heroes who refuse the call and then end up leading the rebellion because they're well suited to it. And audiences like them because we can see ourselves in a Zero who becomes a hero. But Paul, at least at first, rightly identifies that he is a pawn in a larger power plays that the Bene Gesserit have put in place for years, and keeps trying to reject the mantle of savior. Not because he doesn't want to take it to House Harkonnen or the Emperor, he says openly that he wants revenge, but because he knows that ultimately embracing it will cause more death and destruction at a larger scale. He literally says billions of lives. But try telling the faithful that. Especially when his mother has become the leading spiritual figure and is stirring the pot. It's also definitely not an accident that Paul and Lady Jessica are white people who team up with non-white folks to take down a really bad, bald, pale, and ruthless group of rulers whom they carry out guerrilla attacks against. And that Paul comes from a great house whose symbol he never fully abandons. This is all reinforced by, well, everything in the movie, including the shot selection, the score, and the performances. As much as people are using Javier Bardem as a meme right now, that's entirely within the line of how he behaves in the movie. He's so blinded that he can't see any faults in Paul or his plans. He's been dying for a savior, so he was always going to see one. The thematic counterbalance is Zendaya's Chani, who makes it clear that she loves Paul, but also doesn't view him as anything other than a man from a great house who's either buying in or using the faith of the Fremen to his own ends. Basically, this movie took the twist and hook of the Matrix sequels and made it work really, really well. The verdict is, this rules. A strong production from top to bottom, Dune Part 2 skillfully blends its ideas with blockbuster appeal in equal measure. 8 out of 10. This has been Scott's Self-Indulgent Movie Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to join our Facebook group, Scott's Self-Indulgent Movie World, for the latest reviews, discussions, and more. See you next time, everybody, and stay safe.